My greetings to all of you. May you all grow in blessings and grow in goodness as well. So just to apologize firstly that my voice is not so good today. So when it rains like this, I have an allergy towards this humid weather. But it's normal for us to develop illnesses like this. So I wish to express the happiness that I find seeing all of you coming to practice here, and those here and online as well. That yesterday I just came back from a branch monastery in Bak Chong, and I was walking past the sala here and saw many, many people sitting in meditation. But really, when I first came in, it seemed like there was all devas sitting, like this hall was filled with devas. And it really seemed like that on the first glance. And so you'll have this opportunity to come and practice the Dhamma. And this is a very important opportunity. It's the second day, full day of this retreat now. And so probably many of you have listened to the teachings of many different teachers, many different Dharma teachers listened to their talks. So like in Australia, Ajahn Brahmawangso, different teachers in Singapore and Malaysia. And so there are these teachers in the Mahanikaya sect, in the Dhammayut sect, those in the Ajahn Chah tradition, many different teachers, and probably have listened to many of their Dharma talks. But if you just listen to their talks, but you don't take what they say and put that into practice, then it's just listening. It's kind of like it just passes into you and then passes out of you. Similar to a bird flying into this monastery and then flying out again. And it's hard to see the benefit that arises from that, a bird just flying in and flying out. And so having listened to teachings from many teachers, but not putting them into practice, there isn't benefit that arises within our hearts. So therefore, when we listen to these teachings, and we find teachings which match our hearts and our temperaments, then we should take those and put them into practice. And there are so many different kinds of practice. It's not that it's like there's just one type, because different Dharma teachers, they have had different experiences themselves. So in the tradition of Ajahn Chah, we teach anapanasati, so the mindfulness over the in and out breath, reciting Buddha along with that, or contemplating the things which arise within the mind. And so sitting in meditation, watching the breath, the in-breath Buddha, the out-breath, reciting Do, Buddha, 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 like this, until the mind settles into peace. So this is how Venerable Ajahn Chah and his disciples taught. But there are other traditions as well, where they focus on the stomach, and then on the in-breath they say rising, on the out-breath, falling. And people may ask, is it wrong to do that? Well, it's not wrong. That too can bring the mind to peace. Or in other traditions, they teach about lifting up the arms and the hands in a certain way. And is that wrong? Well, it's not, because that's having mindfulness over the body. So really what's important is to have mindfulness. In other places, they teach to stare at a Buddha image and recollect the good qualities of the Buddha. And when we do this, then piti, this rapture, can arise within the heart. And that too is not incorrect. So each of these paths, they're not incorrect. But what they depend upon is whether or not we are intent to do them, and how much intention and sincerity we have. And that really is what is important. So like coming here to practice at Wat Mapchan, the way that Thanh Ajahn Anand teaches is to recite Butto. So Butto, Butto, Butto. With the breathing on the in-breath, but on the out-breath, do. When doing walking, and then we place the right foot, recite but, the left foot, do. And carry on until the mind settles into peace. So we do it like this. We have our effort in this way. And when this happens, then the mind will come to peace. But what many people do is they have expectations, a wish that as soon as I come to practice in this way, then my mind should fall into peace immediately. But that's not how things are. Also coming here to Wat Mapchan to practice, you may feel like there's just a natural sense of peace within the heart. And that is the energy of the Krupa Jhan, of the teacher here. And we may not be able to see that ourselves, but we can feel it. So you go to sit in the Bodhisattva Vihara, and the mind is just peaceful and cool. And a part of the reason for that is the energy of our teacher here, that his energy can help our minds to become peaceful more quickly. And sometimes when we sit in meditation at home, we feel like it's difficult to bring the mind to peace. But we come to a monastery and it settles into peace more quickly. So therefore, in the space of each day, we should try to have effort and to set our hearts on this practice, on not recollecting the things at home, your work, or anything in the future. You don't send your mind out to those things. You don't send it out to any difficulties, suffering in the past and the future. That all of that you leave at the monastery gate. Leave it outside the gates when you come in. You've had this sincerity to fly all the way here, crossing countries, crossing seas to come here. So have your efforts as well to be meditating so that you can bring your mind to peace, to be contemplating so that you can see the Dhamma. And then one day, if you carry on with this, then you'll be able to see the Dhamma. And so when sitting in meditation, recite Bud and Do. When walking meditation, recite Bud, Do. And carry on with this until the mind becomes peaceful. And when the mind settles into peace, and then there's a great stillness and contentment within the heart. So we feel the in-breath, recite Bud, feel the out-breath, recite Do. And the mind can just settle into the stillness and this peace. And when the mind is in a peaceful state like that, then different things around our body, so sounds for instance, they won't disturb us, they won't annoy us. So we may hear some people make sounds, we may hear someone hit a nail with a hammer or use different machinery, but it's not disturbing to us. The mind doesn't become unsettled and chaotic. But it's not the case that we don't hear anything whatsoever. It's just that there's this deep peace within the heart. There's a happiness there, a deep contentment and fullness. In order for everything to just vanish when we sit in meditation, that's on the level of apana samadhi, that we don't know anything, we're not receiving any sense impressions. But in the beginning, it's not necessary for us to get to that point. We can start off with Kanaka Samadhi, this minor form of Samadhi, and Upajara Samadhi, neighborhood Samadhi. And these are not above our ability to achieve if we set our hearts. So when the mind comes to peace already, then what do we do with that peace? This Tandajananan teaches that we should contemplate the body. But it's also not necessary for us to wait until our minds become peaceful first for us to contemplate the body. That we can be doing that all the time. When we're at work, we can be contemplating our body as well. When illnesses arise, we contemplate the body, seeing how this thing, it's unstable, it's changing, it's not a permanent thing. And so how many years have we been alive for already? And as we progress in years, then we start developing different pains. A pain in the back, pain in our heads, pain in our arms. That the body deteriorates in this manner. It's like our skin. And according to... well, we see the skin and we think that it's something beautiful. But really, it's not that way. And according to science, they say that with each passing day, our skin deteriorates, it dies every day. And so the old skin dies away and there's new skin that comes up. And it just carries on going like that without stopping until we die. And so with this body, as we carry on using it, as it gets older and older, then the skin starts drying up and becoming wrinkled. But often we don't see that until it's very old already. But it happens. It starts happening right from when we're young. It's just we don't see that change. And so we don't really contemplate these things. But we should try to do so. We should try to contemplate the body, how the skin dries up, how it's something that isn't clean. If we look inside the body, where are we going to find anything that is clean? And one of the awakened teachers, he said that it's like we have a paper bag. Our bodies are like a paper bag. And maybe we go to the marketplace and we buy some pork meat and put it inside that paper bag. And then after a while, it starts to give off a foul smell. And so then we think, well, how do we fix that? So we clean that meat, we spray the bag with a perfume so that people around us won't get that smell, the smell of the body. And so it's the same with our own bodies. And that where are we going to find something clean within them? So we should try to contemplate in this way, so that we can know them as they are, know them in their truth. But for the most part, we try to not see their truth. We try to find perfume and makeup to put on the body, and try to obscure its asubha, non-beautiful nature, because that's its reality, is that it's not beautiful. So the Buddha wanted us, and the great teachers, they wanted us to contemplate this body so that we can see it for how it is, see its reality, see how it's not beautiful. Because when we see that, then we let go of our attachments to this body and our attachments to the people around us as well, a husband, a wife, our relatives, our children. We let go of our attachment to them. And so when we let go of the attachment to our own body, then we let go of the attachment to the bodies of people around us as well. And when we do this, then the act of developing our hearts becomes a lot easier. And perhaps the number of lives that we have left reduces and reduces. So it's not the case that we can only practice when we're sitting in meditation. We can be contemplating all the time. If we just sit in meditation and experience some peace, and then we come out of meditation and that's it, well, where does that peace go? What use have we gained from it? It doesn't really bring any benefit. So when we gain peace, we use that to contemplate this body and see this body for how it is. See its drawbacks. See how, having been born, we experience pain and suffering. How it's not attractive. There are all these different kinds of illnesses that arise within it. And in the end, this body has to pass away. So if we have wisdom, then we'll also have belief in the teachings of the Buddha and how we spin around in this cycle of samsara, going between birth and death without stop. And that's if we don't find a way out of that. So we need to find a path to cut down the number of realms of existences and lives that we have left. So we have this great fortune. We've been born as a human. We've met with the teachings of the Buddha, the teachings of his awakened disciples. We have a body which has all of its parts and is complete. We also have strength of body and strength in terms of our wealth as well. Because if you didn't have strength of wealth, then you wouldn't be able to make it to Thailand. So it's important to have both of these, that if you had a strong body but you didn't have wealth, then you wouldn't be able to have the opportunity to come here. So when you have this, both energy in terms of body and in terms of your wealth, then you need to have effort as well to bring about benefit from that so that you don't die in vain. So coming to practice the Dhamma under an awakened teacher, this is something that is really good. But don't do it in a way that's just a trend, that you're just following what other people do, that my friends are going, so I'll go as well and have a bit of a rest at the monastery. I mean, it's still good to do that, but you need to have sincerity as well. To be meditating, to bring the mind to peace, and then contemplate the body to see its reality. And try to see it for how it is, how it's something that doesn't last, how it's something that steadily deteriorates until it goes back to dust. It's like going to a funeral here in Thailand. And I'm not sure what the funerals overseas are like, but in Thailand, you see how after the body has been cremated already, and the next morning you go to have a look, and there's nothing left. It's just dust and a few fragments of bones. It's nothing more than that. But before the cremation, they use chemicals, formaldehyde, for example, to stop the body from going rotten. And then they dress it up in nice clothes, put makeup on it, make it look very beautiful. And they open up the coffin for the monks to go and have a look and contemplate the body. And it still looks quite beautiful before the cremation. But where does it go to? What happens to it after it's burnt? It's just ash and some fragments of bones. And so where has the person gone to then? So we attach to these bodies and get all stirred up by them, and our lives get all stressed with different things. But where does that all go to? It's just bones. It ends up as just bones. And where am I then? Where's the person within that? We can't find a me there. So when we've seen this and we've understood this, then we should come to contemplate. And we should set our hearts on cultivating goodness in whatever way that we can. So in offering food to the monks on alms round, helping out in our society in ways that bring about goodness. When we have the opportunity to do that, then we should try to do that. And to not do things which would, and say things which cause people difficulty and suffering. Because we know that in the end, everything that we attach to, it's just nothing. It's just ash. So when we're angry, then we should forbear with that and to not do anything, say anything that will cause other people to become upset, but rather try to say things which give people encouragement instead. When we're driving our car and we see people trying to cross the road, then we stop for them and allow them to cross. And this is goodness. When we do these things, then we feel happy inside ourselves. So we don't need to go to the monastery all the time to create goodness. But we can do that in the societies in which we live. We can be building this goodness all the time. So if there are people who need help and we're not in a rush, then we help them. And we don't want anything in return. We don't even want their thanks in return. We just want to help them, and that's all. And as we do this for 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, the results from that will appear for us. That we have a happiness in our heart, and we have a heart of metta, of goodwill and kindness. And when we have that, then when we see other people do good deeds, then we ourselves feel happy. And we don't really need to do anything ourselves. We just see other people do things. And if we're like this, then this makes for a society which is really pleasant to live in. That other people do good things and we feel happiness within ourselves. That we don't need to use our own money to do that. And then for ourselves, if we see those who are in need, then we go help them out. And so this brings happiness, this brings goodness. And this is generosity, which we can do all the time. Or if we're going to get on a plane and we see someone who's disabled, someone whose body is lacking in energy, then we let them go first. And we say, don't worry about it, you go first. Or if we're waiting for food and we see someone who's unwell, then we allow them to have the food first. And acting in this way, this brings a happy society. And we shouldn't expect other people to be doing these things as well, that we just do them ourselves. And there's this happiness that arises from that. So the end point of generosity is sila, is virtue. That when we've reached the end of generosity, then virtue will come to us on its own. When we're generous in a consistent way, then what we're doing is having a heart of gentleness and of loving kindness. And with that heart, sila is naturally there. So the end of generosity is sila. And we'll just want to take the precepts, we'll want to look after them, and we'll be very firm and steady in the precepts because we don't have any thoughts of wanting to harm anyone else. There's loving kindness there in our minds. That we have this giving towards them, we have loving kindness towards them. There's no wish to hurt any being. So if we're sitting in meditation, for example, and a mosquito comes to bite us, Then, and we feel a bit of pain, we just brush it off. It comes again, then we brush it off again. We don't hurt it. If we have some wisdom, then we can put on a fan so that it won't come and bite us and annoy us. Or we can use some repellent so that it won't be able to smell us. And in this way, then, it's easier for us to experience peace when sitting in meditation. Because this is an obstacle to our meditation. Mosquitoes, feelings of pain, these are obstacles that have come to test us. And they're testing, are we able to pass them or not? But this is getting on to meditation, so I'll come back to sila. And so the sila, generosity, there's no wish to kill any beings, no wish to steal, no wish to take anyone's loved one. Because if we do that, then they feel sadness and suffering. There's no wish to tell lies. Because if we do that, then we become someone who isn't trustworthy, and it brings difficulty to others. So we don't do that. We have a heart of kindness, and we don't do that. And then there's the fifth precept, that of abstaining from intoxicants. Because what we're trying to develop is wisdom. And so we have wisdom, we have generosity, we have sila, and we don't take intoxicants because that works to destroy our mindfulness and our wisdom. And when we're in that state, then it's easy for us to say things that are inappropriate to say and bring about sadness in others. And then when we do that, then we ourselves feel suffering. And so we don't wish to take intoxicants because we're not able to keep control over ourselves when we're under the influence of them. So when we have sila and we're firm in sila, sila is firm within ourselves, then we can meditate without difficulty. And that's because the ingredients for meditation are all there. Generosity is there, virtue is there already. So we cultivate our minds without difficulty. And have you ever seen a thief meditate? Or maybe you have. Maybe they're sitting in meditation, but their minds aren't peaceful because they're scared. They're really cautious. The mind is lacking in loving kindness. It's lacking in this quality of virtue. So it's possible for people to still have the meditation posture, but their minds are not peaceful. They just seem peaceful externally, but internally it's different. And so for those who are generous and virtuous, it's just a natural part of the way they are, it's not hard to meditate. And the mind becomes peaceful more easily. So, therefore, Tanajan Anan had the kindness to give me the opportunity to talk with you, to give you some encouragement. So I've talked a bit about this generosity, about virtue, about meditation. And these are things which you should all try to cultivate. Having listened to them, you need to try to do them as well. But also, it takes time as well. It's not the case that as soon as you meditate, the results appear for you instantly. But it does take time. It's not like going into the 7-Eleven and buying something and you just get it straight away. So for some of you, in order to be able to see the Dhamma in line with how the Buddha taught it, it may take your whole life to get to that point. But this is something that you are able to do. So what I want to say to you is that really go for it. You have this opportunity. You've been born as a human. You have a healthy body. So use this opportunity so that you don't waste your life in vain. And some people, they have a lot of wealth and they have a strong body, and they use that to just travel around and find entertainment and fun in this world. But there's no end to that. It doesn't stop. And really, it ends in death. And we don't know what karma we've created in that state. And so, getting born again, where does one go? So, this death and then rebirth, this is something that the ways of science isn't able to test and verify. So we need the ways of religion to do that. And some people claim that there is no next life. They don't believe in it. But it's good then to ask, well, is there a tomorrow? What about next week? What about next year? Do those things exist? And for someone who is already past tomorrow, so like today was yesterday's tomorrow, and we've already passed that, so then we believe there's going to be a day after this day. And so we have that conviction due to that knowledge that we have. We've passed through that already. So these realms of existences and future lives, this is something that the Buddha had passed through already. The awakened teachers, they've passed through that already. They have knowledge of that. And they've taken that experience and knowledge to teach us, to tell us how hell really exists, heaven really exists, nibbana really exists. But this is something that we don't need to go too far away in order to see. That heaven is right here in this present moment. Like we sit in meditation in this monastery, there's contentment in the heart, joy in the heart's full of goodness. And that's heaven right there. And if we die in that state, then the mind takes rebirth in the realm of heaven. But if our minds are really heated and agitated, they have a lot of ill will, vengeance, wishing to harm others, then when they die, there's no need to worry about going to heaven, because that's not what's going to happen. That their minds already are in a hot and agitated, painful state. And so it's not, even if they wish to go to heaven, it's not possible for that to happen. So therefore we should have trust and belief in what our awakened teachers tell us, and have effort in our practice as well. Effort in being generous, in being virtuous, cultivating samadhi so that we can actually get it, and then contemplating this body so we can cut off our attachments to it, so that we don't attach to it excessively, so that we're not just lost in it, just deludedly following along with it until it falls apart. But we should contemplate it first. And as we contemplate, then, as the awakened teachers say, then we're able to reach nibbana as well. Able to reach a state where there isn't birth anymore. Because we see that when there is birth, then there is suffering as well. It may be easier for us to contemplate that on people around us, see those who are sick and those who have passed away. We see that dukkha, this discontent, is normal for this world. So therefore, when we are aware of this, then we should try to not be born again, but to reach nibbana following the Buddha. So may all of you have great energy in doing this. May you set your hearts on this. And Tan Najananan, the kindness to allow me to speak to you today. And what I have to say is no more than this. So may you all grow in blessings.